show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute and a half past the hour. Welcome to this 29th of July, 2014 issue edition of The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That, of course, is where you'll find access to the chat room. Folks wandering in even as we speak. A quick question coming in from indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky. How's the sauna? It ain't a sauna today. We've been, as the saying goes, unseasonably cool for the last couple of days. It got down into the low 50s last night, which is just bizarre. I mean, being a furnace is bizarre in Appalachia in July. So, too, is being, a walk-in refrigerator. No, it's downright comfortable in here this evening. Thank you for asking, Sparky, and good evening, John. Folks wandering, like I said, wandering by. We don't stand on ceremony here. Come on into the chat room any old time the mood strikes you. Just whenever you take a fancy. Head on radionetwork.com/chatroom, and you'll be part of the overall ongoing real-time full multimedia experience that is The Horn. Oh, great. Yeah, Northern California, according to Sparky, 104 lovely degrees. Wow. But it's a dry heat, right? that's always the consolation, right? Yeah, it's a dry heat. So this is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. I might remind you that Titanic Tuesday is so named for the Titanic intellect on display at any given time from the right wing and occasionally other folks in this country. You might recall that Jim, our buddy Jim, once told the story of the 962nd tier right-wing blatherhead over in Beckley. I mean, honest to God, if his brains were gas, he wouldn't have enough to fill up a piss ant's motorcycle and run it halfway around a BB. Who answered one of his mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking followers one time, who called us, "Steve, why you reckon it is there's fossilized shellfish looking rocks in West Virginia? We ain't nowhere near the ocean." To which he replied, "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." Yeah, yeah. No word yet on the movement of the Titanic butter dish. Oh, well. So that's where we get the idea of Titanic Tuesday, the Titanic intellect at almost any time on display by the right wing in this country. And we're not going to have to work real hard this evening, I promise. We got lots of material, Titanic intellect and everything. But, like I said, mostly it's the Titanic intellect of the right wing, which usually means repiglickens. But we have a special entry this evening. And I have to tell you, I have to warn you, that this entry is by someone who calls herself a Democrat. Yeah. We're talking, of course, about West Virginia Senate candidate Natalie Tennant, who is really having a hard time finding her moral center in this year's Senate race against the daughter of the single most corrupt the daughter of the single most corrupt Republican governor West Virginia has ever had. We're talking about Shelley Moore Capito, daughter of Arch Moore. Shelley being, I mean, it's kind of creepy to look at her. She looks like her dad in a bad wig. Just brings back all kinds of bad memories. Anyway. So Natalie Tennant's in this race against Shelley Moore Capito. And Shelley Moore Capito is absolutely, beyond a shadow of a doubt, god-awful. Let's make no mistake. There is no way a progressive or a liberal who was trying to do anything but maybe monkey wrench the system in a sort of burn baby burn approach would ever vote for Shelley Moore Capito. But here's the problem. Natalie Tennant, because she's got a D after her last name, thinks that progressives and liberals in West Virginia will just vote for her because we have to. Because we've got no other choice. We've got nowhere else to go. She forgets that if we get into the polls, we can just, you know, once you're in that booth by yourself, you can vote for whoever you want to, or you can just blow right by a few races and leave some blank. As if to say, well, you gave me two choices and they both sucked, so I'm taking a pass. None of the above. She hasn't figured that out. And this is the hubris of the modern politician in the United States of America. Politicians, and they are taught this, okay? They are taught this by highly paid political consultants, you know, who talk with their teeth clenched and called everybody babe, and wear gold chains and shit. They're taught that they deserve votes. Not that votes are earned by a politician, not that a political campaign is an extended, in my opinion, way too long, job interview, but that it's more of a pageant that ends in a sort of coronation. And the only thing that well-paid political consultants know how to do is shovel great, stinking, steaming piles of barnyard excrement at the people of a given electorate in order to try to find out which side is going to or which candidate will be loathed more. Witness the Senate campaign in the state of West Virginia, for instance. I got an email a little bit ago from this creature by the name of Amy Graham. Now, I'm sure she is a paid political hack and flack. agraham@capitoforsenate.com. And she wants you to know that Shelley Moore Capito brought her fight for coal. Isn't it interesting that the fight is for coal, not for the people in the coal industry or the workers? It's a fight for coal. Directly to the EPA's, they don't pay much attention to, but really, for all the money they're paid, they don't pay much attention to messaging. Brought her fight for coal directly to the EPA's doorstep today. Wow, did she stand in the door and say, coal yesterday, coal today, and coal forever? Shelley Moore Capito, George C. Wallace? Did she? I don't know. No, she testified against the pathetically weak CO2 emissions regulations that the Obama administration EPA has proposed. She did it in Washington, D.C. According to the press release, Arch in a bad wig took the EPA to task for refusing repeated requests to hold a listening session in West Virginia. She thinks that the EPA should come to West Virginia to let the frothing, mad, rabid, freaked out, ginned up, terrorized friends of coal scream at the EPA. Were I the EPA, I would not come to West Virginia. Or if I did so, I would not do so with anything less than the very best body armor that the United States military has to offer. And I mean head to toe. None of this flak jacket BS. No, we got some serious friends of Cole squirrel hunters out there that can take a squirrel out of a tree with a .22 rifle at 300 yards. Now, I'm talking about, you know, the battle suits from the video game Crysis or something. That's the only way I'd let EPA officials come here. Because if it was announced that the EPA was going to come to West Virginia or Eastern Kentucky or Southwest Virginia for a listening session, the friends of coal would immediately gin up in sight, that's another word for gin up, a riot. There would not be enough police in the state of West Virginia to quell these hopping up and down coal monkeys. You're going to take away our jobs, and we're going to have to freeze to death in the dark. And our children are going to go on the welfare, and everybody's going to have to shit in a bucket and live in a cardboard box, goddamn. That's pretty much them. But she took them to task. She said,
to have the federal government refuse to even listen to a segment of the American people is frustrating, demoralizing, and frankly insulting.
Although bear in mind that Shelley Moore Capito wouldn't want my sorry ass in there being listened to. Because if I stand up and start talking to the EPA, I'm not blowing my own horn or anything. Get it? You know, see what I did there? Horn. Head on radio network. Yeah. I'm not blowing my own horn or anything, but you participate in this conversation every evening. You know what I'd say? I'd talk facts. Because facts are what we have precious damned few of in these silly political pageants. And there are real facts at issue here. Because, of course, if Shelley Moore's weird little supporters got in the room, they'd hop up and down and they'd scream and they'd say, Co keeps your lights on. We power America. Because that's what the boss done told us to say. She went on to say, Shelley Moore did.
My state of West Virginia has already lost 5,000 coal mining jobs between 2012 and 2014.
Here's the fun part about that statement. It's probably marginally true, but you know where the jobs went? You know who took the jobs away? Hint, it wasn't us tree huggers. Goddamn tree huggers. You want the tree huggers? It was the merciless sons of bitches in the coal industry. Yeah. They put out these quarterly profit and loss statements that include things like earnings reports where they talk about rationalizing employment numbers. And what rationalizing means is canning workers. Why are they canning workers? Because they're running out of coal. Because the coal that they mine out in places like Wyoming is in seams that can be 100 feet thick that are easier to get at and cheaper to mine. But don't try to explain that to a friend of coal. It's because Obama's he's that Kenyan usurper Muslim and he hates America. See how it works? So, yeah, there are coal jobs that have been lost, but what Shelley won't say is why they were lost. It was the people who give her money who took the jobs away after they took the mountains away and the clean drinking water and the streams and the life in the streams. and the air in the lungs. That's who disappeared those jobs, not that Kenyan Muslin. That Kenyan Muslin comes from coal country. He loves him some coal. Illinois is coal country. You knew that, right? Yeah, just ask our good friend Jeff Biggers. He can tell you. Or maybe you might want to go and read his book, Reckoning on Eagle Creek. He can tell you about what strip mining has done in southern Illinois and about how his family's old set, old stomping grounds and the farm lands that were his heritage are, you know, just gone. Anyway, Arch in a bad wig continued.
Many more jobs are at risk because of this agency, this president, and regulatory efforts that go far beyond what Congress intended when it passed the Clean Air Act.
Right, Shelley, because when Congress passed the Clean Air Act, they didn't mean for it to actually bring about, you know, clean air. God almighty. So that's Shelley Moore, who then goes on to sleaze Natalie Tennant a little bit. By the way, I want to thank our News Ninja, Gene and Ann, for getting us started on fundraising this evening. We begin the evening, we ended the evening last night facing a $200 hole today, our regular $150 plus the $50 we didn't make up last night. And thanks very much to Dr. John for, with his Goodbye July challenge, for getting us, and those who responded to it, for getting us as far as we did. Well, thank you to Gene and Ann. Instead of 200, it was they made it 190, and Sal just jumped in to make it 185. So 18 folks, 10 bucks apiece, do you reckon we can do it? Nine folks at 20? Six at 30? Two at 90? You know how it goes. So thank you, Gene and Ann and Sal. Thank you very much. That's how we keep all of this going, and we will have a bit of a hole at the end of the week simply because I know I've got to be gone from here probably for the 31st. Either tomorrow or the 31st. I'm not sure. I have to talk to the boss, you know, Agnes, about that. What else? Back to Natalie Tennant and how to be a clueless person pretending to be a Democrat. We know that Shelley Moore is going to pander to the coal industry in any way that the coal industry asks. There is no question that the coal industry could ask of Shelley Moore that she would not comply with. And I mean none. Ew. Enter Natalie Tennant. Now, Natalie has proven herself indistinguishable from Shelley Moore in terms of the coal industry. She is actually engaged in an effort to outpander a member of the Moore family, and if you were from West Virginia, you would know what a Herculeanly impossible task that is. You cannot outpander the Moore family when it comes to the coal industry. They're going to do them some coal industry loving. I don't even think Joe Manchin can outpander the Moore family. And he panders, and he's a pro. So along comes Natalie Tennant and her well-paid, not very competent political advisors who have told her that she's got to pander to coal, too. You can't hold political office in West Virginia unless you pander to coal. You can't talk about the future. You can't talk about the sick and dying. You can't talk about the fact that coal does not rule the roost here anymore, because as far as you're concerned as a politician in West Virginia, Miss Natalie, it does. So Natalie has gone around the country hoodooing some Democrats into thinking that they should give her money, and they have. You know, the triangulation Democrats, the DLC types, the middle-of-the-roaders, the go-along-to-get-along, wishy-washy, wish-they-were-a-Republican Democrats. And apparently a few honest-to-God, no kidding, you know, liberals have written the big old money check. Now, there are a lot of visuals in this ad, but we're just going to deal with the audio on pass number one, okay? Here we go.
I'm Natalie Tennant, and I approve this message. Where do they think their electricity comes from?
They being people in the White House. The opening shot. Okay, we're not going to just deal with the audio. I'll do play-by-play here. The ad begins with a black-and-white photo of Natalie Tennant shaking hands with some West Virginia gray hair. And I don't mean that as an insult insofar as I are one. And then it cuts to a photo of the lit-up White House. And I want to be sure before I've only watched this thing about 6 million times. But I want
to... And I approve this message. Where do they think their electricity...
Okay. Where do they think their electricity comes from? It's a shot of the White House. It's all lit up pretty and white. Remember, the White House is white because we were once as a nation so goddamn poor that we could not afford paint after the British burnt the building. So we just whitewashed it and called it quits. That would turn out to be an actual governmental policy for a lot of the things that we did in the United States, in the United States history. Just whitewash it and call it quits. But, and this is central to it, this is central to the message. It's something I noticed that nobody else has noticed because noticing crap like this is my job, I guess. The White House is all lighted up. You can see the Washington Monument rising to the left of the photo in the background. And the fountains are spewing their water, fountaining. What fountains do. Who do they think provides their electricity? Well, do tell us, Miss Natalie.
It comes from. You and I know it's our hard-working West Virginia coal miners that power America.
Really? Hey, Sparky. Front and center. Out there in Northern California. Did you know that hard-working West Virginia coal miners power Northern California? Because that's what she said. They power our country. Hey, friends in the Midwest, where there's just all kinds of wind turbines all over, did you know that hard-working West Virginia coal miners power you? How about you up? How about y'all up there in the Columbia River Basin? Did you know that hardworking West Virginia coal miners power you, even though you've got a boatload of hydroelectric power? Yes, indeedy. God damn. I mean, we got us some genuine stupid here. World class.
Where do they think their electricity comes from? You and I know it's our hard-working West Virginia coal miners that power America. I've fought to protect our coal jobs right alongside Joe Manchin.
Really? Right alongside Joe Manchin? That's your pitch, Natalie? I'm Joe Manchin with better hair? And slightly younger? Who wrote your script? Did you hire... Aw, now, Natalie, did you hire the same people that Joe hired to run your campaign? Because if you did... You got had! Because, see... Joe Manchin just had to run against a lunatic. You know, Racy? That guy's crazier than a sprayed roach. Wasn't no way he was going to beat a member of the Manchin family in a race for the Senate, no matter how many bajillion dollars he had. The guy runs out there to the nearest microphone and declares that because he can't smoke in his office in Morgantown, West Virginia, that it's just like being herded onto a cattle car on the way to Auschwitz. Great jumping Jehoshaphat. A third grader could run a campaign against an idiot like that. You're up against a pro, Natalie. You are up against a pandering pro with enough money to burn a herd of sopping wet elephants one wet $100 bill at a time. Man, Natalie, they saw you coming, didn't they? Hey, here comes that tenant kid. Let's shake her down for her lunch money. Anyway, back to the stupid ad. With the crunchy grinding guitars. Is that a single coil in there? Kind of sounds kind of stratty to me.
I've fought to protect our coal jobs right alongside Joe Manchin, and I'll stand up to leaders of both parties who threaten our way of life.
Really? Who threaten our way of life? Do let's talk about that for a moment, Natalie. Who threaten our way of life. Huh. What's a bigger threat to our way of life? Having to transition away from a fossil fuel that is not long going to be with us and has already been proven to be running out and on the way to done? Or dying from breathing that same industry's toxic poison dust and drinking and bathing in and cooking with and washing our babies in their toxic poisonous water? Which one's a greater threat to the way of life, Natalie? Did your well-paid consultants tell you that it was leaders of both parties in Washington, D.C.? Did you hire some of those third-way, third-eye-blind the goobers from Washington? Natalie, where's your good hillbilly common sense? Mercy sakes. I'd have thought Mama taught you better. Thought you had you some West Virginia values. I thought you knew that people outside of Appalachia would always try to take advantage of people inside Appalachia. But there you go. You want my money, mister? You gonna run my campaign? Golly! We haven't gotten to the best part yet. Oh, no. No, we haven't.
I'll make sure President Obama gets the message.
Oh, she's going to go to Washington and take a message to that one in our White House? She's going to make sure that the Kenyan Muslim with the deep-seated hatred of white people and the anti-colonialist policies is going to get a message? Well, what kind of message are you going to send to him, Natalie, as you're standing there on some sort of industrial site that might or might not be a coal mine, or maybe it's a limestone quarry in, you know, Wyoming somewhere. Who knows? How are you going to send him a message, Natalie? Oh, my God. She's done. The camera's done panned to the right of her, and she's reached her strong left arm over to a breaker box with a big old red handle on it. What are you going to do, Natalie? What are you going to do? Oh, she turned it off. She pulled that lever down with real determination, she did, I tell you. She turned off the power. And what happens? Oh, my God, the stack stops spewing steam or smoke or particulate matters that choke young asthmatics to death. Not sure. Oh, you hear all that static? That's the electricity that's not going to flow through the lines out to California, up to Washington, north to Wisconsin, powering Chicago, over to New York City and Washington, D.C. And there's the best part. We end where we began. Yeah, with the White House. Because Natalie Tennant done turned off the electricity for that there Kenyan Muslim in the White House. And it's gone as dark as he is. Yes, it has. Yes, it has. Now he's got a little taste of what it is he's trying to do to Appalachia, make us freeze to death in the dark. Yeah, yeah, it's July the 29th, by God. Yeah, Barack Obama, you just sit there in our White House and you freeze to death in the dark in the middle of July. But here's the fun part. Here's the part that nobody else noticed, but I did. Because I guess that's my job. It's not just the lights that go out. Remember how I mentioned the fountains were fountaining? The fountains stop fountaining, too. Yep. Not only is Natalie Tennant going to turn off that one in our White House's electricity, she's going to cut off his water like he's one of those people that lives in Detroit. I tell you what, that is one woman that knows how to stand up to that one, ain't it? What an idiot. Honest to God. We were both degreed by the same institution of allegedly higher learning, and I think I'm on the verge of turning in my diploma. Nah, I'm kidding. I'm a proud son of Harvard on the Mon. But God almighty. Now, you can go to YouTube and I get approved by Natalie Tennant, paid for by Natalie Tennant for Senate. Yeah, sure.
Well, yeah, Texas Betsy, I got me a degree, but they give me a diploma that shows that my degree's upon it. I done graduated to sixth grade. I can do my gazettas and my cipherins. Hee hee.
Actually, I done got two of them. But who's counting? So there we have it. There we have it. This senatorial race is going to come down to which candidate a bunch of racists in West Virginia think hates that one in our White House more. But I'll give you this on a Titanic Tuesday. At least, what did Forrest Gump say in the actual book, not the stupid movie? At least I ain't led no humdrum life. It's never humdrum in West Virginia. It's always interesting. I mean, granted, there are a million stories in the Naked City, but there's got to be at least a few thousand in the denuded mountains. I didn't think, as God is my witness, I did not think that anybody could ever make a more offensive, more stupid, more utterly bottom-of-the-barrel, scraping, ignorant political ad than Joe Manchin when, slightly before the anniversary of the assassination of John Kennedy, he put out a campaign ad that showed him peering through the scope of a .30-06 at a piece of paper with cap and trade bill written on it, tacked to a tree, and proceeded to assassinate the piece of paper. There, in that month or so before the anniversary of the assassination of John Kennedy, they called that ad Taking Dead Aim. Yeah. Yeah, Jim noting by email, West Virginia governors. One went to jail and the other ended in Chicago, C-Town, driving a cab, making an honest living, I guess. I'll take the latter, the guy in C-Town driving a cab, making an honest living. The former's progeny lives on. Ugh. And there's an interesting little bit of West Virginia history there. We're talking about two governors who were charged with corruption. Arch Moore was charged with corruption and sent to prison because he turned out to be a shakedown artist who was shaking down the coal industry for bags of money. The other individual that Jim is mentioning is a man by the name of Wally Barron. Wally Barron, too, was driven from office. You know why Wally Barron was driven from office? Because in the early 1960s, he suggested that it might be a good idea to put a tax on coal, back when there was still quite a good bit of it left here, so that this state could and its people could begin to reap some of the largesse of all of that wealth being taken out of state. He was destroyed for that idea. Ruined. Yes. To the point where he wound up finishing his life unknown and unmourned as a cab driver in Chicago. See how it works around here? Yeah. I know some people will take issue with me for this, and I hope you'll forgive me anyway. I'm still a registered Democrat. I'm probably going to remain a registered Democrat because from time to time there are contests around here between Democrats that make a difference. Those are called primaries. And when my vote actually makes a difference, I like to exercise it. But see, that's the thing. I'm a Democrat. Those middle of the road don't give a damn about the dying types that are running Natalie Tennant's campaign are not. FDR wouldn't know them. JFK wouldn't recognize them. Hell, Robert C. Byrd probably wouldn't recognize them. But I tell you what, trying to find a Democrat in this Senate race, and understand, emotions are running a little bit high these days. I was accused earlier today of working overtime to elect Shelley. This was in a post that featured a photograph of Natalie Tennant grinning like a fox eating shit out of a wire brush sitting between Steve Doocy and Elizabeth Hasselbeck and that other jackass on Fox. Because, yes, she went to Fox for Fox News' endorsement. She's not like all those other Democrats. She's willing to stand up to Obama. Yeah, really, not kidding. Because those well-paid political consultants that I strongly suspect are also Joe Manchin's political consultants. Otherwise, why does Joe Manchin get a mention in her ad? Told her it would be a good idea to go on Fox News because all mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking West Virginians watch Fox News. Which means, as noted in yesterday evening's program, that half of everything they hear is straight up not true. Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, note coming in from Tim from L.A. Subject line, how is electricity made? Spinning turbine causes large magnets to turn within wire coils. These are the generators. The moving magnets within the coil of wire causes the electrons, charged particles, to move within the coil of wire. This is electricity. Maybe when Natalie said power is created by hardworking West Virginians, she meant thousands of teabaggers running in a hamster-type wheel and turning the turbine and producing electricity. Now that coal's going bye-bye? I wish. That I could deal with. But it ain't so, Tim. It just ain't so. So anyway, I was told that I needed to stop being a single-issue voter and support Natalie because the world is at stake. The Senate hangs in the balance. Me? Really? Little old me? That's all on me? I'm impressed with me. But it got me to thinking, am I a single-issue voter? For simply asking a political candidate to, what? Acknowledge that they're not say that the reports are right or wrong, but merely to acknowledge that there are 24 peer-reviewed scientific reports that suggest that there's a problem with everything from birth defects to increased hospitalizations to cancer to heart disease to excess deaths in the mountaintop removal communities of West Virginia. That makes me a single-issue voter. You get to thinking about that because, you know, we've got some history with Joe Manchin here. I recall that Joe Manchin helped to stymie the nomination of a man, an excellent lawyer, who was nominated to be the head of the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice. But because the man had at one point in time written an appellate brief as a lawyer for Mumia Abu-Jamal, Joe Manchin decided that he was unfit to serve in the Department of Justice as the head of the Civil Rights Division, when the man had actually done his job pursuing the civil rights of an incarcerated individual. Yeah, I know. Figure that out. But really, am I a single-issue voter? Because, see, I got to thinking about the issues that really are at stake here. Because I was told that it's about more than coal. You need to move beyond coal. You need to think about things that really matter. So, a few questions as I try to sort out whether or not I'm a single issue voter. If it's just about coal, then is it also about, say, the drinking water of 300,000 people who were poisoned at the beginning of this year, and about whom Natalie Tennant has been most timid? Is it about, since it's about more than coal, is it about more than the organ removal surgeries my daughters endured? before they were 15 years old. If it's about more than coal, is it also about more than the precancerous cysts on my wife's kidneys? If it's about more than coal, is it also about more than the birth defect with which my son was born? If it's about more than coal, is it also about more than the wife of my best friend, whom he buried dead from cancer after she spent years breathing poisonous dust rolling down off of a mountaintop removal site? If it's about more than coal, is it also about more than my dear friends, Judy and Larry, who died in the shadow of mountaintop removal and the poisons thereof? Is it about more than 4,000 excess deaths per year in mountaintop removal counties? Is it about more than elevated birth defects and cancer and heart disease rates? I think these are fair questions. But I do want it made clear. I'm not doing any work for Shelley Moore. I despise that woman. I really do. I loathe her. I've met her personally. And I felt like I needed to be showered in bleach after I did. But I'm not going to sit here and lie to myself or lie to you and pretend that Natalie Tennant stands for any of the things that I believe in or that motivate me as an American and as a West Virginian. Because, and we listened to the audio from the ad, right? Yes, we did, and I talked about the visuals. She's given us empirical evidence that she doesn't share my values. Hell, she doesn't even share my reliance on facts. She thinks that West Virginia is providing electricity for the rest of the country. Good God. So, from where I stand, if Natalie Tennant can't be bothered to give evidence of even a basic level of humane compassion for the sick and the dying of this state and this region, then what's left, if you're a Democrat, to vote for more than her airy promises that if we send her to the Senate, she'll vote the right way? Some examples, based on our own conduct. Can you see Natalie Tennant voting for a Supreme Court nominee put forward by President Obama? I can't. There's no evidence for it. Can you see her voting to protect the Affordable Care Act? I can't. There's no evidence for it. Can you see her, and think back to the commercial, the audio we just ran, can you see her voting to protect humanity via a bill to address the issue of climate change? I can't. There's no evidence for it. Can you see her voting to protect a woman's right to choose, being as how she's from a state that largely thinks, that still thinks that women are property? I can't. There's no evidence for it. Can you see her voting to extend some form of compassion to thousands of immigrant refugees from Central America? Little children. I can't. There's no evidence for it. And from the crowd that's supporting her so vociferously, the only argument they can mount is, yeah,
But Shelley Moore won't do any of that either. So we know that no matter whom we vote for, those things that matter to us as liberals and progressives are going to go begging.
And all along, going all the way back to January the 5th, 2014, 4 days before the Freedom Industries disaster struck, up until now, up until this past Friday when I had another op-ed in the Charleston Gazette, I've asked her to do one thing. I haven't asked her to condemn mountaintop removal. I recognize the political realities of this state. I've asked her to do one thing, as noted. Not to say that the peer-reviewed scientific reports are correct, but merely to acknowledge that they exist. Talk about a bargain basement offer! Daggum! Just acknowledge they exist. And, you know, we'll be okay. That's a pretty minimal standard, wouldn't you say? I mean, I'm not asking her to bust out and start acting like Bernie Sanders. I'm a political realist. I understand you can't be Bernie Sanders in West Virginia. You damn sure can't be Bernie Sanders in Alabama. Or South Carolina Stan. You know, only Nixon could go to China, right? But this is a state that one way or the other is deeply steeped in the teachings of the Bible. This is a state where the vast majority of people claim to be saved. This is a state where the vast majority of people believe that a Palestinian day laborer named Yeshua Bar Yusuf, who was an itinerant rabbi, allowed himself to be nailed up on a crucifix like so many thousands of other subjects of the Roman Empire had been. But that in his being nailed up, he was giving his life not only for those who had gone before, but those who would come after. And that in that act of self-sacrifice, he literally saved people from the fires of hell. I once was lost, but now I'm found, was blind, but now I see. There's power, power, power in the blood of the Lamb. This state, most of the people in this state believe that. And I offer that without any commentary as to whether that belief is right or wrong. It is a reality. But you see, and this is why I bring the issue up. Believing that, most people, if you ask them in this state, if you say, hey, what did Jesus say about the poor? They will tell you what appears in the book of Matthew. And that is that Jesus said, feed the hungry, clothe the naked, house the homeless, visit the sick. And that's where Natalie Tennant comes in. And that's where what I have said comes in. You see, I have not suggested that Natalie Tennant needs to heal the sick. Jesus didn't tell people to heal the sick. He said to visit the sick, not to leave them to lay there in their own agony and their own misery as they slowly shuffle off this mortal coil. Hold their hand. Mop their brows. Kiss their living cheek while yet it still living is. And that is what acknowledging the bare existence of these scientific reports does. It is the equivalent to visiting the sick. Jesus didn't say, heal the sick. He just said, visit them. And by the same token, I'm not saying to Natalie Tennant, solve the problem. I'm asking her to acknowledge. Admit there is a problem. Do you see the distinction? Of course you do. It's kind of hard to miss, isn't it? So, let's take a break. By the way, we are still, where our fundraising is concerned, we are still $185 away. Thank you to Gene and Ann and Sal. I hope we don't crawl into a hole here as we exit July. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. The traditional mail address is under the Contribute tab on at headonradionetwork.com as well. This is Conversation Radio, and we've got more Titanic intellects for this Titanic Tuesday. But it, like I said, it's Conversation Radio, and if you want to jump into the conversation, you are certainly more than welcome. The number, 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178. That'll get you right through here, and we'll get you right on the air. We've only got one line now since the magic box is down. And so if somebody's on the air, just wait till they're not, and then you dial in next. If you want to just do Skype to Skype, it's Bob Kincaid Horn. The contact address is Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. If you've never sent me a contact request and you want to talk, send me one. I'll approve it lickety-split, and we'll be off and running. Either way is fine by me. Of course, you can also reach out to the program by Twitter, at Bob Kincaid. You can contact me on Facebook, Bob Kincaid. And lo and behold, email is bobkincaid@gmail.com. Do you sense a theme? I think I do. So this being Tuesday, the 29th of July, 2014. We also have the Green News Report. Yay! I love the Green News Report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. So we'll check that out, and we'll come back to your calls or further filibustering, however you see fit to set it all up. Like I said, We walk the talk and talk the talk. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
It's Tuesday, July 29, 2014.
Folks, we are just talking about the impact of exploration process here. Imagine what's going to happen when the actual drilling starts.
Obama administration approves controversial sonic cannons for offshore oil exploration on the East Coast.
It was just unbelievable, like in Massachusetts, this happening.
Bizarre extreme weather across the U.S. Colorado judge strikes down local fracking ban. General Mills takes action on global warming. Plus,
this technology enables the forest to talk to the world.
Rocker Neil Young wants your help to stop illegal logging in the rainforest.
All of that illegal logging in the free world and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
Their flocculent poo enriches the phytoplankton and stimulates the fisheries.
I know I'm stimulated. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, as we always like to do on this broadcast, connecting the climate change dots, we've got crazy weather. Not just bad weather, but crazy weather, from lightning on the West Coast to tornadoes on the East Coast to beautiful, cool fall weather in the middle of July in the middle of the country.
Yeah, it's really weird extreme weather. For example, over the weekend, for the first time in recorded history, a tornado hit the northern Boston coastal town of Revere.
Just outside Boston, Massachusetts, a powerful EF2 tornado, winds up to 120 miles per hour.
It was just unbelievable, like, in Massachusetts, this happening.
It is the first tornado ever confirmed in that county.
And in Venice Beach in Southern California, as you mentioned, one man was killed and at least 13 others were injured by extremely rare lightning. Witnesses reported at least 4 direct lightning strikes on the beach. That almost never happens.
On the weekend, in the middle of summer beach season out here in L.A., just amazing.
I know, especially because it almost never rains in July, and here we had lightning.
In the meantime, I'm hearing from all of these people in the Midwest who are usually sweltering right now with horrible humidity in the middle of July and August, and they're telling me it's cool, beautiful, 40% humidity. Something strange is going on, and maybe it's that climate change you've heard so much about.
In other news,
aside from the environmental impact, this is going to affect anyone on the East Coast whose job relies on fishing or tourism.
The Obama administration will allow the oil industry to use sonic cannons to look for oil and gas beneath the sea floor off the Atlantic coast. It is the next step before opening up the region to offshore drilling. Conservation biologist Dr. Reese Halter tells Ed Schultz on MSNBC that this will severely harm thousands of marine animals, like endangered whales.
It shatters their eardrums. They experience the most excruciating death possible. These cannons are going to kill thousands of dolphins and whales. They're going to maim hundreds of thousands of dolphins and whales.
And I'd also like to note that whales, dolphins, and other marine animals did not respond to requests for comment.
No one ever asked the whales or dolphins for their opinions.
Nope, they never do. In Colorado, a federal judge has struck down a voter-approved ban on fracking within the city limits of Longmont, Colorado. The judge said, quote, "The citizens' sincerely held beliefs about risks to their health and safety conflicted with state law and the state's interest in developing oil and gas deposits." Longmont is just one of hundreds of towns fighting to put limits on the explosion of oil and gas drilling within their borders.
So the citizens voted against fracking, local control, which, by the way, is what Republicans always claim is the most important type of control, and now the big government state is overriding them. I imagine Republicans are furious about that?
No, they're not. They're siding with the state and the oil and gas industry lawsuits.
Imagine that.
But some good news. After a grassroots consumer campaign organized by Oxfam, food and beverage giant General Mills has announced a corporation-wide initiative to cut its greenhouse gas emissions and will require the same from its global suppliers as well. And it's probably self-serving because grain prices are already spiking due to extreme weather around the world.
Yeah, I always knew that General Mills was a good guy.
Moving on. Rocker Neil Young has thrown his weight behind a new Kickstarter campaign from the group Rainforest Connection to fight illegal logging in the Amazon rainforest that will allow the trees to call for help, literally.
We use old, recycled smartphones that we hide in trees to listen for the sound of destruction. The moment one of our devices detects the sound profiles of chainsaws or other problems, an alert is sent to local rangers who can intervene in real time and halt the logging.
Rainforest Connection says a test project in Indonesia worked on the first day to stop illegal loggers in the act.
So the whales and dolphins aren't talking to us, but the trees are.
Yep.
Can we talk back to them?
Unless you speak tree, not yet.
For much more on those stories and a whole bunch we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help the Green News Report stay on your public airwaves. Download us anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes, and find us and follow us on the Facebook and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
I talked to the trees, but they don't listen to me.
I will not back down.
Newly elected president of the Alabama Public Service Commission.
I think the file's a little strange there, but... Yeah. Wow. I thought I was the only person left in the world who knew about that moment on film in which Clint Eastwood sings. You know that was Clint Eastwood, right? Singing, I talk to the trees, but they don't listen to me? Yeah, it really was. It's Paint Your Wagon. Apparently Jim heard the words sonic cannons and went, ah! Note coming in from Jim. Sonic cannons? Oh, my God. Just great for marine life. Ask the Navy about the deadly effects. Yeah, the Navy's already learned that. Sound waves pass through water are whose idea was this? Dick Cheney's? Because it's torture. Sheesh. Sonic. Why don't they look for oil with sharks with laser beams on their frickin' heads? Don't give them any ideas, for God's sakes. Okay, so it is Titanic Tuesday on the horn, and we do have a little bit more Titanic intellect. This takes us, of course, to Alabama Stan. Sweet home, Alabama Stan. Yeah. They, too, down in Alabama, are right upset about the incredibly probably not that effective EPA emissions regulations that have been promulgated. And the EPA is going to have another listening session in Hotlanta. This is where we would maybe cue up Little Feet, you know, Oh Atlanta. No, Alabama Pig Lickens are going to go to Atlanta, and there they are going to give the EPA an earful. Jessica sent this along, as did our buddy the Angry Indian. This is the story of Alabama Public Service Commission President, and I'm not kidding, Twinkle Andress Kavanaugh. Twinkle. Twinkle's been playing around the periphery of Alabama Republican politics for quite a while now. I remember when she and Howard Dean had a bit of a tiff a while back. Now, I don't know if you realize it or not, but Alabama mines coal too. They just haven't gotten around to doing, you know, full on mountaintop removal. But they mine coal. You may recall back at the beginning of the 21st century, a number of people were killed in the Jim Walter mine disaster down there. Twinkle Andress, speaking of the EPA and sounding an awful damn lot like, oddly enough, Natalie Tennant, alleged Democrat, said, I will not back down. We will not stand for what they're trying to do to our, where have we heard this before, way of life. Now, Twinkle is a liar, of course, because she claims that Alabama has 16,000 coal jobs. Mercy. 16,000, that's a very large number. Then, of course, what did I tell you about the whole religion thing? Twinkle couldn't get through her press opportunity without making a reference to the Almighty.
I hope all the citizens of Alabama will be in prayer that the right thing will be done.
No, really. She just directed the people of Alabama to pray for more climate change, pray for more coal-based pollution, pray for more deaths from particulate matter. Pray, 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 pray. But it wasn't just Twinkle getting all evangelical up there at the podium. There was also Alabama Public Service Commission member-elect Chip Beaker. Last time I thought Beaker was a character on the Muppets. Yeah, that's Beaker. Unfortunately, Chip Beaker did not say. No, Chip Beaker said, "Who has the right to take away what God's given a state?" Mm-hmm. See, God gave that coal to the people, the white people of Alabama. Eons ago, at least 5,900 years ago, God seen that there was going to be white people living in Alabama and that they would need coal. And so he put the coal under the ground for the people of Alabama. Now, never mind the fact that there were probably population densities approaching that of, well, that were higher in Alabama before the arrival of white folks than they would be until probably the mid-19th to early 20th century. There were populations of indigenous people who were living successfully in what is now Alabama without burning coal. So, in fact, if God did put the coal there in Alabama for the white people to use, he did so knowing how stupid the white people would be with the coal. It's not a blessing, you fool. It's a curse. I hope all the citizens of Alabama will be in prayer that the right thing will be doing. Mm-hmm. I'll worry about it tomorrow. By the way, even with these weak-kneed regulations that the EPA has promulgated, they do estimate that between 2,700 to 6,600 premature excess deaths will be prevented annually. Annually. That's every year. That's somebody's granny, somebody's grandpa, even in Alabama. That might get a few more years to be a grandmother or a grandfather to some child. Some grandchild. That's a few more years of a mommy getting to be a mommy or a few more years of a daddy getting to be a daddy to a child. Because remember, Alabama has family values and they're pro-life. Right? Now, this is not to say that Alabama is entirely peopled, because it is not. There are wonderful people in Alabama. Some of them aren't even progressives or liberals. They are deeply misguided, profoundly undereducated. Many of them deal with poverty, and poverty itself is crippling. But no, Stacey Probst is the executive director of Group Against Smog and Pollution, GASP. Stacey Probst said, "Our state officials are not enforcing the current laws. We are polluting so much in this city, namely Birmingham, and we're one of the dirtiest cities in the nation, so we're not allowed to bring in additional pollution." Well, I guess you could argue that, Devin. Devin with a query. Excess deaths makes it sound like they're excess hillbillies? Not really, though. No, it's excess death of the number of hillbillies that there already are. These are, what it means, a statistical excess death means that after you've factored in everything else, people are still dying for factors not necessarily accounted for. For instance, we know there are 4,000 excess deaths in mountaintop removal counties in West Virginia every year. What that means is that after you've accounted for all the things we do wrong, the gravy we eat on our gravy, on top of our biscuits, on top of the gravy, the two or three packs a day of Seneca Gold floor sweeping full flavor cigarettes we honk on, the liquor and the beer and occasionally screw top wine that we swill, the poverty, the lack of education, the pills, the meth. After you factor in crappy housing, after you factor in everything you can think of, we still got 4,000 people dying in mountaintop removal communities, and all that leaves is, hey, look, poison dust. Well, I can't find a better way to say it, Devin. That is actually the scientific term. You'll have to take that up with the scientists. Excess deaths. Deaths in excess of the statistical norm which one would expect to see. And they got them in Alabama, and we got them in West Virginia, got them in Kentucky, Tennessee, got them all over the place. In fact, these incredibly weak EPA CO2 emissions regs that will do next to nothing to American business. Remember, American business, generally speaking, are liars. It doesn't matter if it's minimum wage or seatbelts in cars, or there's always somebody, or CO2 regulation. There's always some member of the business community that's going to put us right out of business. The whole economy is going to collapse. There won't be nothing here. We'll all just have to sit in sackcloth and ashes and die. If you fill in the blank, raise the minimum wage, give women the vote, eliminate slavery, it's going to destroy the economy of America. Ooh, I haven't had the Hardee's gravy in a long time, Devin. I always kind of, and you'll hate me for this, as fast food gravy goes, I always favored the McDonald's gravy. But really, when you get right down to it, there's nothing to compare to the gravy you get at a side-of-the-road diner somewhere in godforsaken, busted-knuckle West Virginia. Somebody working in the back there is working on that gravy, on that sausage grease, and chopping up the sausage hunks, and you can just feel your arteries hardening. They're making biscuits bigger than cat's heads. Whew! You betcha, Devin, West Virginia. Open for business. Yeah, but God done give us that there co, and we got a right to burn it. But when you burn coal, don't you get the smell of brimstone? Isn't that where the phrase brimstone comes from? Burning rocks, sulfurous, asphyxiating fumes. Who in the mythology of the Bible is more associated with brimstone? Would that be Jesus Christ and his daddy God? Or would that be Satan? Yeah, that's what I thought. Food for thought. Food for thought. So I'm not necessarily going to be camped out on this issue all night long. This is an hour and 24 minutes, roughly, of filibustering over it. By the way, Conversation Radio is wide open. We have never lost a single caller. I mean, except when I pressed the wrong button. But nobody's ever fainted dead away or, oh, my God, Bob, we can't tell you. No, he passed out. Click. No, that doesn't happen. Asa in Vancouver pointing out, Maybe Miss Twinkle thinks of the Alabama Stand coal rollers. You remember them. We've been talking about them. As part of those 16,000 coal jobs. Got to spell that. J-A-W-B-Z-Z-Z-Z-Z-Z-Z-Z-Z-Z. Jobs. Anyway, if you want to get involved with the conversation side of conversation radio, the phone number is real easy. 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178. Well, that's true too, Devin. Point well taken. That's an off-air kind of thing. But we didn't lose him. So what else? Where next? Jesus, everybody's a critic. More Satan for the next, or more bass for the next Satan, please. Hold on. Satan? Was that more what you had in mind, Marty? That's two knobs. One knob is a real challenge. I can't commit to that every time. Randy and PA asking, sonic cannons? That's when your blue slushy explodes, right? Well, I wouldn't know because our sonic over in Beckley went the way of all flesh and some franchises. And I don't know why. I mean, they had a sign out in the yard that said, Friends of Coal! And they had a sticker on their drive-up window that said, Friends of Coal! And then, gone. I guess they weren't friends enough. By the way, thanks going out to Betsy. Thank you, Betsy, very kindly. Betsy has taken us from 185 to go fundraising this evening to 165, and that's a really big deal. Staying out of the fundraising hole is a really big deal. We are now $15 away from getting caught up with last night and $165 away from not being in a hole. We try to raise, remember, $150 per evening, which is really not a lot of money when it comes to keeping an actual global radio broadcast going. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Hey, Jim, what's happening?
Just listening to you and reflecting upon your reflections.
And what are your reflections of my reflections? Do you have? Well, let me ask you first. Do you want a sonic cannon?
No, I don't. I can remember as a kid watching this program called Diagnosis Unknown, and this woman actually killed her husband with sound in a swimming pool.
Really?
Yeah. Sound is much stronger as it passes through water.
Sure, because the water then adds its own kinetic energy, right?
Exactly. And, of course, going through air, I think it goes around 12,000 yards a second, if I'm not mistaken. Someone could correct me about that. And, it can be extremely deadly to anything coming in contact with it like that, particularly marine life and... You know, when you start messing with one edge of the marine life food chain, well, you can imagine what it does to the rest of it. And basically, that's the food chain upon which we depend.
Well, aren't the seafaring the right word? Aren't the whales and the dolphins pretty much, and the porpoises? Pretty much the high end of the scale in terms of marine life. In terms
of
they
have their own language. That's been proven that they communicate, and you know, they're extremely intelligent animals, beautiful creatures. And
if only they could learn to speak English.
If only we could learn to speak dolphin or whale.
Well, that is true, too.
That's for damn sure. Pursuant to, I think last night, or I think I heard this somewhere on your program. I have been listening to you regularly. But, pursuant to World War One, I've been getting a lot of strange dates. On TV, they say it's 28 July when the Archduke was shot. No, it's 28 June. And, of course, the official beginnings of the First World War was 4 August of 1914.
Well, yeah, and I was a little confused, too, because I actually heard yesterday when I was out and about, I heard that yesterday were the first shot. Now, we're not talking about the assassination of the Archduke.
No.
And we're not talking about the launching of the German move through Belgium and into France. But they were pointing to some Austro-Hungarian action of July 28th, 1914 that were technically termed the first shots fired in the Great War.
I think that had to do with Belgrade or something like that, if I'm not sure. You know, the Austrians and the Russians that had this long feud going between Austrian minister Aerenthal and the Russian minister Sazonov back in 1904, and I think Aerenthal had duped Sazonov, the Russian foreign minister, who never got over it. And finally, when August 4th rolled around, or when it was getting into the thing when the Russians were going to mobilize, Izvolsky, the Russian foreign minister, saying, "C'est ma guerre, this is my war." And he just could not wait to get into a scrapping match with everything. And the reason I'm saying this, it was just more than a bunch of royal families having a squabble. It was the people who advised them and their civil servants who had been playing around with all these mindless, blind treaties of which no one knew about until, of course, the whole thing broke open.
But yeah, and that reminds me of something that my good friend Paul wrote a month and a half or so ago, when he noted that had Rasputin, as odious as he was, not been segregated away from the Tsar, he may well have argued for Russia not to get involved.
Well, Rasputin was laid up somewhere near Ekaterinburg, or I think that was basically his hometown, because he told Lizarina that one day she would see that town again. It was on her way to exile and execution. And, of course, he was laid up because some woman had laid open his entrails and he couldn't get back and advise. But he telegraphed the Tsar and said, "Do not make war, because it is only the Russian people that will suffer." And, you know, he said, "Do not do this." And this may be apocryphal or whatever, but, you know, even before his death, he even predicted that. And he said, well, and this is as the story goes. He said, "If I am killed by members of the peasantry, you guys will be okay. But if a member of the nobility kills me," and Prince Yusupov was the one who allegedly shot him, he said, "you will not last more than 2 years." And that was in 1916. And by 1918, they were all massacred at Ekaterinburg. Rasputin's home, I think, it was a place called Tyune. It was a strange little village or whatever, but none of that.
He's a fascinating character.
He is indeed. I mean, you know, it's just incredible. I mean, he basically was able to achieve inroads into the imperial palace because of his ability to help the little boy suffering from hemophilia. And medical medical knowledge today realizes that Rasputin could have had a calming effect on the boy. Sarajevich, who suffered from hemophilia. As a matter of fact, Robert K. Massey, Nicholas and Alexander, the author, and many others on Russia, had a son who was a hemophiliac, and he was particularly interested in hemophilia. because it's even proves that relaxation techniques used in oral dentistry and things like that can alleviate the symptoms and acute manifestations of blood loss from hemophilia. I didn't mean to get off on all that, but I just thought I would just share.
No, that's it's fascinating stuff, Jim. It really is.
No, but your revelations about the opponent for Shelley Moore Capito, well, doesn't leave a whole lot, does it?
No, and listen, I'm not trying to get in a feud with anybody who's going to vote for her. I'm not trying to do that at all. I'm trying to shine a light on, and you've been in this state for quite some time, Jim, on the failed politics of this failed state. This is a failed state, okay? A state that refuses to regulate its industry sufficiently to keep 300,000 people from getting poisoned is a failed state, Jim, is it not?
Of course it is. That's the reason I emailed you and said, you know, you had problems with people watching Fox News when you were at the clinic or wherever you were. Well, that's what most of this state watches. I can guarantee you that.
Yeah, I mean,
they take Fox News and those.
There's a reason it's on in the doctor's office, isn't there?
I don't know. I mean, and in one of my doctor's offices, it is not on. And he has some stuff to realize that. God bless him. But, I mean, they just believe everything those idiots at Fox and Fiends, as Don Imus calls them, Brian Kilmeade and
that's the other Yahoo. I can always remember Steve Doocy.
Oh, yeah, and he had his background in journalism and in Kmart. That's where he came from. And they're all three just assholes and their interpretations they make.
Amen. Amen. And like I said,
Don Imus, like I say, there are parts of Imus that I enjoy and parts of him I don't. But at least he's got probably more sense than any person on the Fox News network, and he's on Fox Business News because I watch that every morning. And he has some interesting things, humor and stuff like that. And I have a lot of respect for him because of his ranch and kids with cancer and stuff like that. The guy has a heart. He's a recovering cocaine addict, and you know, he has an understanding of what it's like to be down and at the victim's end of certain things. And that's the reason one of the reasons I like him. I don't always agree with Don Imus. Of course, I don't always agree with anybody. Hell, I don't always agree with you.
No, well, you know, welcome to the human race.
I mean, you know that. But nonetheless, at least I'm
well,
not
what, a, what, what I'm getting at, Jim, and I know I know that, I, or at least I think I know you know what I'm getting at, is that it's not just that we have a pervasive culture of coal in this state. It is that we are actually engaged in retrograde motion. Okay? It has not always been this bad. I've been here for a long time and coming here for even longer. And I've been schooled in this state's politics. I was schooled in this state's politics in the cradle.
Mm-hmm.
Because I guess I just happened to come from two, you know, they certainly weren't power families, but families used to pay attention to politics in this state. You know, my grandfather Kincaid was out there stumping for Al Smith when he ran against Herbert Hoover. Okay, we got some roots here. But we in this state, Jim, and in this nation, okay.
Yeah, they killed Al Smith because of his
He was Catholic.
Yeah, exactly.
But in this state and in this nation, we are, whether we recognize it or not, and that's the thing about science and external realities, it does not ask for our permission to be what it is. We are at a crossroads. And the directions we take aren't just in regard to us in the present day in the modern world. You know, this is the the Native American position, which I have so much respect for, namely that you must make decisions as touching upon seven generations forward. Because that's the only way that you can make sure that you're not really, really screwing up.
Well, you know, here, there's intellect, and then there's a great deal of what I call counter-intellect. And it's particularly victimized by, you know, a lot of people who are taking advantage of people whom we, as you referenced earlier, who do not have education. And this isn't just not West Virginia. This goes throughout the whole damn country, I swear to God. It just, there's no longer any type of honesty. It's counter-honesty. It's no longer charm. It's counter-charm. And I can remember, oh, God, you and I have been talking for 10 damn years. And I can remember using the word retrograde with you many times, if you'll remember.
Indeed. And what I'm getting at, Jim, is, well, let's take as an example black lung disease. You know how horrible it is. It is and has been a scourge to this state for more than 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
And there came a time when, through the good offices of, I hate what my mind does to me sometimes, Ken,
me too.
Former Secretary of State in West Virginia, Ken Heckler. Also former member of Congress, confidant of Harry Truman.
Yeah.
Ken Heckler was almost single-handedly responsible for getting relief for miners who had their lungs destroyed in the service of the greater economy via coal mining.
Yeah, didn't he teach at Marshall University?
Oh, he did. He also wrote The Bridge at Remagen, which is a wonderful book.
Right.
And but he was a member of Congress, and he shepherded the black lung legislation through, and all of West Virginia, everybody who was not a coal boss, I guess, anybody who actually worked for a living, knew that Ken Heckler was on their side. Now, one of those studies that I'm talking about with regard to Natalie Tennant, one of those studies is with regard to the fact that black lung, which had been to a certain degree in abeyance, which had been at least diminishing, is now again on the rise. And it's not just on the rise, Jim, it's on the rise directly related to mountaintop removal jobs, okay? We're not talking about black lung rising because of people underground mining. It's on the rise on mountaintop removal sites.
Oh, sure. I mean, you know, when you explode all that stuff into the air, I mean, you know, whether you get it underground or on the surface.
Right. And so where once upon a time the politicians of this state could have a conversation about the needs of working miners to be protected against black lung, one of these studies is about the resurgence of black lung, and we can't even talk about that. Because we cannot, politicians in this state cannot talk, Jim, about anything that not the coal miners, but the coal bosses don't approve of. And I know you know the meaning of the word, so you're not going to take it wrong when I say that there are elements of the political life of this state that are nothing if not Stalinist.
Oh, they're worse than that. They're worse than that, you know. That's all there is to it, as far as I'm concerned. They don't live here. All they do is get their money from here, and none of the adverse effects of what we've been discussing has any personal impact upon them. You know, that's the thing. You know, they're absentee landlords. And you've got the tenants who are the ones who are having to suffer from the resurgence of pulmonary problems and God only knows how many other things that you've talked about. And I won't go into that because you certainly have made your position quite well known about that, and I do agree with them. And it's just incredible of how heartless and without compassion these people are, because the only thing that makes any difference to them is, you know, their quarterly profits or their bonuses or whatever the hell they get. And, you know, they are complete, they're monsters. That's all there is to it. They're monsters.
Yeah, straight up.
I would hate to have to account to them or for them if...
When standing before the throne of judgment?
Exactly. I mean, you know, I would really hate to have to do that. I would not trade places with any of those people for all the tea in Mexico.
No. No.
That's for damn sure.
Yeah. And we ain't talking about oolong either.
No, 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 no. Not Lok Pong Si Chong or whatever. I mean, I wouldn't. I mean, they have no soul. I mean, they have no compassion. They have no empathy. They don't have any of the human characteristics that would enable them to be even classified as human beings. And that is...
Well, see, the counter argument that's being made is, you know, listen, this is West Virginia, coal owns the state, you can't get elected to office unless you bow and scrape before the coal industry. And Kelly in the chat room just said something similar, and I'm not starting a fight here. Kelly said, Natalie's just saying what it takes to get elected in this state. I understand that, but the fact of the matter is, saying what it takes to get elected in this state in 2014, according to the conventional wisdom, is to talk like a Republican.
Well, I agree.
And
with you.
She's not going, and I don't know why it's so hard for me to communicate this message. She's not going to out Republican a real Republican.
No, she's not. She's an ersatz Republican.
And in point of fact, the entire, well, you remember when was it Fritz Hollings? And I know he was a friend of your family who just, I mean, he could have been elected senator from South Carolina from now on. But he quit, and he said, I'm sick of it. All I ever do, my entire day has nothing to do with governing or legislating. My entire life is wrapped up in asking people for money. And it's disgusting.
Right.
And so we live in a country whose utterly corrupt political system is entirely centered upon a permanent campaign which requires permanent fundraising. Now, who, being logical and rational as we are, would think that upon being elected senator, let's say it happened, Natalie Tennant would just, you know, tear off the rubber mask and say, here I am, I'm Ted Kennedy, returned from the grave. It ain't gonna happen.
No, that'll never happen.
Because she has to stand, the minute she took the oath of office, Jim, she would start having to run for her next term 6 years hence.
And already bought and paid for.
And if she was to suddenly up and say, well, I think whoever the Muslim socialist Kenyan wants to nominate for the Supreme Court is fine by me. He's got my vote. Or jump out there and say, you know, I want to make sure that we protect the Affordable Care Act federal exchange for all the people who now have insurance in West Virginia. Or, hey, you know what? That climate change bill's really important. I'm going to vote in favor of it. Well, she might as well go ahead and resign because she's doomed in the next election cycle, isn't she? And she is a career politician. She doesn't want to be senator for one term. She wants to be senator for life, or maybe senator and then governor, or maybe senator and then governor, and she's young enough. Hey, maybe she wants to be president.
Well, you know, basically, that's what all these people are doing, or a lot of them doing, is basically they're not interested in the well-being and concern for their constituents, except every 2, 4, and 6 years. Basically, what they're doing is they're interested in their career tracks, and of course, as a buffer to not being reelected, they have made contacts within the Beltway with a lot of interest groups, which will guarantee them a very soft berth and a golden parachute. That's all they're interested in. That's exactly
what I fear you're correct.
I know I'm correct. Hell, I used to work with these people. I lived there for years. I've seen how they operate. I mean, you know, I've dealt with them. Walked the same halls you did, friend. Talked with people, stuff like that. Been to meetings and stuff like that. Things that have been on TV and stuff like that, you know, in trying to support rights for veterans, veterans care, veterans health care, veterans mental problems, traumatic stress. Even during the first Gulf War, there was a big, you know, hush thing about this disease called leishmaniasis. That, you know, when our troops first went over there to Kuwait, they were warned not to drink water from wells, and they were sending all these troops bottled water and stuff like that, and it was coming out to me from various sources and things like that, and that a lot of the troops were just filling up the bottles that were sent to them from water from those wells. And leishmaniasis, for example, is something that the people over there have developed an immunity from, but which we have no immunity from. And I've seen 250-pound men go down to 125 before they died. Had to deal with that. And so that's when leishmaniasis came up on your program one time. I sent you an email about it. And, you know, how deadly it is. It's called Dundun's disease. Point of fact, the reason I'm mentioning this is basically people's own interest being put above those who serve them. And it should be the other way around. That's what I'm trying to say. Not too well, but good.
No, you're doing fine. You're doing fine. Well, I know, you know, it's funny, if returning to the matter of West Virginia politics for just a moment, if there is a watershed moment in this state for when everything changed, it is November of 1996. Because that is when Joe Manchin's really filthy, nasty, dirty, sleazy, ugly campaign against Charlotte Pritt bore fruit. You may remember that in the primary.
Oh, I do. Back in 96. Or was it 96?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I surely do.
In the primary, Charlotte, who was an out-and-out, made-no-bones-about-it liberal, beat Joe Manchin in the primary. And Joe Manchin was so aggrieved and so vicious that he said that he had been smearing Mrs. Pritt because she had been a public school teacher, and he ran ads saying, she wants to teach, she wants children, she wants 5-year-olds to watch filthy movies of people having sex and teach 5-year-olds about sex. Which was, of course, an absolute, unmitigated lie. Of course, now we know that Joe Manchin is being sued for $1.7 million by his own brother because he ripped his own brother off to the tune of $1.7 million.
Blood necessarily is not thicker than water, is it?
No, and Joe's having a tough time of it right now. I don't know if you've been following it or not, but that came on the heels. You remember Joe's daughter, Heather? She got herself some ginned up, dummied up, write your name on the back of the matchbook, draw a picture of Spunky the Parrot, and send it in, and we'll send you a diploma, degrees from West Virginia University, while Joe was busy being governor.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And she then went to work for a huge pharmaceutical firm of which she is now the head. And she recently announced that, by God, she was going to do what everybody else is doing and move their headquarters offshore so as to avoid paying taxes to we, the people of the United States, trying to form that more perfect union. At which point Joe Manchin declared, what my daughter did was wrong.
and I'm introducing a bill to make sure that now my daughter's gotten away with it, nobody else can. See how moral I am? And then, lo and behold, he gets a suit dropped on him for $1.7 million by his own brother. Yeah, it's a bad time to be Job, but the thing is, most people, and maybe this is just because I take that long view of history and also occasionally burn a little incense and offer up a rubber chicken to the goddess of irony. She's got a long memory too, and she probably she probably remembers the dirty sleazy business that Joe did to Charlotte Pritt back in 1996, and she's waited because I don't know if you realize this, but across the frieze at the temple of the goddess of irony, which is shaped oddly enough like a jack in the box. It simply says, revenge is a dish best served cold.
Well, that's quite true.
And so, after the sleazy stuff he did to Charlotte Pritt, the chickens are finally coming home to roost on Joe Manchin. Because what I was saying is the watershed moment in West Virginia's modern political life happened in 1996, when, having been beaten in the primary by Charlotte Pritt, Joe Manchin and the Manchin family then quietly funded a sleazy little organization called Democrats for Underwood. You may recall that the Republican gubernatorial nominee was this cadaver by the name of Cecil Underwood, who had until then been the vice president for West Virginia operations of an outfit called Island Creek Coal. And Joe Manchin saw to it that a member of his own party lost the governor's election to a Republican. I don't know if you remember the fellow, but there was a guy who used to call from over here where I lived. Never met him, but he said, we got an old saying around here. No Democrat named Manchin ever voted for another Democrat that wasn't named Manchin.
I used to know who that was, but I've forgotten now. By the way, where does that phrase revenge about the addition eaten cold comes from? Do you remember?
I've heard it quoted so many different places.
I have too. But it's true.
Okay, well, you
quite
know,
true.
It is. Let's see if we can find an answer here. they claim it is a proverbial. Is proverbial, and that. Francis Bacon wrote revenge proverbs. It says here, the first example that this writer can find, he says, is the author Eugène Sue, Memoirs of Matilda, translated into English by D.G. Osborne, published 1846. And then revenge is very good eaten cold, as the vulgar say. But the writer notes that the italics are textual in the original text, in other words, meaning that it was already already in common usage in French. But and I know this will spark a memory for you. It's noted that it shows up in modern usage in film for the first time in 1949 in a brilliant film that I know you know and we both love, called Kind Hearts and Coronets.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. With, what's his name? My Lord, what is wrong?
Alec Guinness.
Alec Guinness, with my little gray cells.
Yeah. Revenge is revenge is a dish which people to taste prefer to eat cold.
You know, another thing that always made an impression upon me is when I first saw Lawrence of Arabia, and I remember Claude Rains playing the part of the British civil servant, talking about the truth, about lies, or spoken by men who are hiding the truth, and half-lies are those who have conveniently forgotten it. Remember that scene?
Oh, yeah.
Played by Claude Rains?
Yes. Yes, indeed. I do.
And in any of this conversation, on my Facebook, there's a my favorite quotation, and it is this. It is only with the heart that one can see rightly. That which is important cannot be seen with the eye. And that is from The Little Prince by Antoine de Saint-Exupéry.
Beautiful, a beautiful work, by the way. It's true.
So,
it takes a bit of human compassion, doesn't it? And that's what he meant by the heart.
And we have so little of that left. That's the thing. Well, listen, you've got other callers and someone who wants to speak, so.
Well, Jim, you have yourself a good evening. It's been a delightful conversation.
Indeed. You take care.
You too. Bye now. Jim calling from not so terribly far from here. A nice chat. Let's take a break. I've got a hankering to hear something, frankly. In talking with Jim, when he said it's not so much that the animals won't speak our language, it's that we can't speak theirs. I was immediately reminded of a happy little moment from my childhood, and hence, well, this. By the way, we are trying to get down below $165 for our fundraising goal this evening. You know, $5, $10, whatever, in whatever combination. That's how we do it. And anyone who wants to jump in is more than welcome, because we get in trouble when we get in holes. This is Conversation Radio. We'll be going back to the phones momentarily, but I got to do this just because of what Jim said. This is the horn.
Polynesia, I want you to teach me everything you know. What? 2,000 languages? Certainly. We'll start at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning.
But it took me over 100 years.
Then we'll start at 7 o'clock. There's not a moment to lose. Matthew, think what it would mean if I could talk to the animals. Just imagine it, chatting to a chimp in chimpanzee. Imagine talking to a tiger, chatting to a cheetah. Oh, what a neat achievement that would be. If we could talk to the animals, learn their languages, maybe take an animal degree. I'd study elephant and eagle, buffalo and beagle, alligator, guinea pig, and flea. I would converse in polar bear and python, and I would curse in fluent kangaroo. If people asked me, can you speak rhinoceros? I'd say, of course, Rhinoceros. Can't you? I conferred with our furry friends. Man to animal, think of the amazing repartee. If I could walk with the animals, talk with the animals, grunt and squeak and squawk with the animals, and they could talk to me. If I consulted with quadrupeds, think what fun we'd have asking over crocodiles for tea, or maybe lunch with two or three lions. Walruses or sea lions. What a lovely place the world would be. If I spoke slang to orangutans, the advantages any fool on earth could plainly see. Discussing Eastern art and dramas with intellectual llamas, that's a big step forward, you'll agree. I'd learn to speak in antelope and turtle. My Pekingese would be extremely good. If I were asked to sing in hippopotamus, I'd say why notamus, and would. If I could parley with pachyderms, it's a fairy tale worthy of Hans Andersen or Grimm. A man who walks with the animals, talks with the animals, grunts and squeaks and squawks with the animals. This is the most exciting thing that's ever happened to me, Polynesia. I can't wait to start. It's incredible. It's impossible, but it's true. A man can talk to the animals. It's a miracle. In a year from now, I guarantee, I'll be the marvel of the mammals, playing chess with camels, no more just a boring old MD. I'll study every living creature's language so I can speak to all of them on sight. If friends say, can he talk in crab or pelican? You'll say like helica, and you'll be right. And if you just stop to think of it,
you know what's sad?
There's no doubt of it. I shall win a place in history.
I love Rex Harrison. You know what's sad? If we could talk to the animals, you know what we'd do? An oil company executive would write a check to fund an endowed chair of animal speech so that we could scream into the ocean, hey, whales, porpoises, dolphins, get the out! We're using our sonic cannon here and you're in the way! That's what we'd use it for. By Jove, it's a rarity. Now, see, you got me talking. It's got me talking. By Jove! No, let's talk to Betsy instead. Hey, Betsy.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm good. I'm shocked, but I'm good.
Dude, I gave you 5 minutes warning.
Yeah, right.
Right.
And you're not going to faint or anything, right?
No. I call in every, 6 years, whether I need to or not.
Exactly.
Oh. Anyway. So I'm calling about last night's program because I didn't listen to it until this morning. And you were talking about the Orthodox tradition, the ultra-Orthodox tradition of using the mouth as part of the circumcision ceremony. And there is some slight pushback on that.
Okay.
So first of all, it's restricted to ultra-Orthodox, generally people who are, it's Hasidic. It's a Hasidic thing. So
just to be clear, when the otherwise not particularly up on the various traditions article says ultra-Orthodox, they're talking about Hasidim.
Pretty much.
Okay.
Pretty much. There are Hasidic groups. There are ultra-Orthodox groups that are not Hasidic, but generally you're talking about Hasidic. So anyway, that doesn't matter. The fact that it's ultra-Orthodox matters because part of why they're doing so they're doing this because in their understanding of what is required in the mitzvah of circumcision, they understand this to be part of it. But the tradition goes back, at least a few hundred years, possibly 1,000. However, it's not accepted among Orthodox or conservative or Reform.
Not only being not accepted, it is acknowledged as dangerous, is it not?
It is. It is. And it's not part of the tradition for modern Orthodox, conservative, and Reform. And modern Orthodox, so there are some groups of Hasidic Jews who have abandoned it, not to do it, so that the rabbi's mouth comes in contact with the blood, but the baby doesn't come in contact with the rabbi's mouth or the moyo's mouth.
Oy.
So there's that.
But I mean, but there can even be germ transmission through a straw.
It's going in the other direction.
The rabbi's
sucking through the straw.
Yeah, but we'd like to think so, but, let's say he has a coughing fit.
Right, yes. So this is, So it's safer, it's not safe. Among sort of mainstream Jews who have their babies circumcised, this is not a part of it at all. My son had a bris at 8 days old and was cleaned with an alcohol wipe.
Yeah.
Or some such, I assume it was alcohol. It was some sort of a cotton swab. But
That alcohol had to feel real good.
Maybe it was
betadine, which isn't quite as painful.
He had an orthodox circumcision. I'm in Texas, and here Orthodox use a moyle who is a retired doctor from Houston. He's a rabbi doctor moyle. The conservative here tend to use a local female doctor as a moyle. She is trained as a moyle, but she's not considered in Orthodoxy to be a moyle because she's got girl parts.
Which is an entirely separate discussion now, isn't it?
Right. It is. But in this community, she is the person who tends to do them. And the last one that I was at that she was there, well, I've seen her twice. She sprays something on the baby's penis to make it less painful. My son, who had an Orthodox one, that was not done. So, yeah. Anyway, if there's pushback, and along the same lines of only Nixon could go to China, if there's pushback for this, and there is, it has to come from Orthodox rabbis.
Well, wait. Wouldn't it have to come from ultra, wouldn't it have to come from within the...
Yeah. Yes.
But let me ask you this. If there is a general agreement among everybody but the Hasidim and whoever the other outlier groups are, that this is a dangerous practice.
Right.
Is
it criminalized?
Well, no, not why is it criminalized. Why isn't it criminalized? But why isn't it just simply banned? I mean, it took a lot of doing, but there is a bizarre Christian cult in Oregon, and I know our Oregon listeners know of whence I speak, that will pray, and there are extant cases of this in the last few years, where they will, with illnesses that are perfectly treatable, not life-threatening, refuse to go to the doctor, pray over the baby until the baby dies, or until the 8-year-old, or the 10-year-old, or the 12-year-old dies. And Oregon has enacted a statute saying, yeah, okay, you do that, you're going to jail, because that is reckless endangerment of a child. And it seems to have passed constitutional muster. Would the entire Hasidic religious world crumble into a million pieces of tiny dust if they had to stop doing this in the course of a bris? I mean... Now, you know my position.
Right, I know.
I think circumcision, whether it be for religious reasons or the bogus, phony, baloney argument that it's hygienic, I think it's all brutality. For all the reasons I've cited. But this particular practice, I mean, I found the response of the New York Department of Public Health to be laughable. Getting the parents to sign a consent for the moyle to put his mouth on the penis of the infant.
So
what parent is not going to sign consent in that circumstance?
So it's not that the parents are going to sign consent or not sign consent. So it's that what moyle are they going to choose? Because there are lots of moyles who don't do that.
Right, but aren't they going to seek out them if they're Hasidim? There
are ultra Orthodox moyles who don't do this, or at least who use the straw.
It seems like it would be a lot simpler to simply say don't do this.
Okay, so.
But I want to make something clear here. You're conversant with the law and the prophets.
Yes.
It ain't in the law, is it?
No. The law says circumcise your sons on the 8th day of life.
And, I mean, so this isn't something that arose out of, say, because so much in Jewish practice going forward did. This isn't something that arose out of the Babylonian captivity. And it's not.
Oh, this is actually based on Greek stuff.
What?
Yeah, I don't know.
No. Wait, which Greeks?
Well, at least the understanding of why removing the blood. That, yeah, okay, I'm sorry, 200 CE, it starts with the Mishnah. I'm going to paste into chat, they've got a timeline.
Okay, I got it here.
So you started the year 200.
Yeah. I'm kind of waiting for it to load, but
So where they say, so what the reference includes the word suction, but the suction at the time, the only suction there was from the whale's mouth. They didn't know about using suction from some other way.
Although hollow reeds certainly existed at that time, and we cannot exclude the possibility of some other form.
Right, but it's in the 1300s. Post-Talmudic medieval rabbis, and they say this is about health, and it's not actually part of the mitzvah.
No, this is interesting.
And then by the 1700s, dozens of rabbis are banning it. By the 1900s, all of the Lithuanian rabbis have banned it.
And then I noticed in that article you sent me that it comes back as sort of a post-Holocaust backlash.
Right, so it's a whole post-Holocaust backlash, but it's not even just Holocaust. I mean, in some countries today, circumcision is banned. And so the feeling is that if you were to ban a part of it, that they, even when there was a petition to the the Agudat Israel, which is the ultra-Orthodox, ruling body, whatever, rabbinic assembly thing, even just having a petition to them, which has been going on for 10 years now, the reaction to that petition was, the next thing you're gonna let the government ban all, circumcisions altogether.
Wow, forgive me, Betsy, but that's a really, really, shall we say, elastic extension of the camel's nose under the tent argument. But just to let you know how my mind thinks.
Yes.
I've been thinking about, if you have to do this ritually, and for instance, we know that before the Hebrew people, and I'm not talking about, and you understand, when I say Hebrew, I'm not talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know better than I.
Yeah.
Before the Hebrew people ever made the first cut, the Egyptians were doing it. And they were doing it to boys as a manhood ceremony at about the age of 13, which had to really freaking hurt.
Yes.
But you know, there's all of that. But I got to thinking, how about an acceptable substitute?
Like?
When Adam and Eve get cast out of the garden, and you and I can speak of this as myth because neither of us are literalists.
Correct.
When Adam and Eve get kicked out of the garden, what does it say? What does the Almighty say to Adam and Eve about what the nature of their relationship will be? In the I don't know what it says in Hebrew, but in the King James Version it says, "He shall hurt thy head," speaking to Eve, "and thou shalt bruise his heel." Right?
I don't know. I'm looking it up. What? Do you have any idea which chapter?
I can find it in a minute. See, this is what happens. This is the problem. This is the problem of making little boys memorize Bible passages. We remember the passage, but then we forget the chapter and verse.
It's going to be like chapter 3. The serpent.
Yeah, okay. There it is.
Between your seed and her seed, they shall bruise your head, and you will bruise their heel. But now I'm looking at the pronouns.
Yeah, that's. So I got to thinking, when a little baby is born, there are within legitimate modern medicine, for instance, there are things that we need to do to a newborn to make sure they're okay.
And we do a heel prick anyway.
Yes, we do it. It's actually a slash. It's a heel slash. So let's get a female moyle, slash the little guy's heel, and say, done. And we serve a medical purpose, and nobody gets herpes. And the little boys don't have to be mutilated for the rest of their lives.
You're not going to get rid of circumcision in Judaism.
Oh, probably not. Probably not.
Doing things. But you said last night, and the reason I decided to call in, although I was going to write, but I never got around to it. You said last night that the majority of loyals are not trained medically. And that's not true, actually.
Really? They're mostly MDs?
No, they're not all MDs, but they do go through a training program. And in many states, they do have to take a medical life-saving kinds of things and neonatal, what am I thinking of? When the heart stops, the new, what do you call that?
Cardiac arrest? I mean.
When you put the, right, and you put the compressions on the heart. What am I thinking of the word?
CPR.
CPR, right. I'm like, CPU kept coming in my head. I'm like, that's not it. Okay.
That's Intel Inside.
Right. So they have to do infants, they have to know infant CPR, they have to be able, there are all kinds of things that they actually have to do in many states.
You know, Jim brings up an interesting point. Is it not Talmudic that in cases of hemophilia, where you've got a generational risk of transmission of that disease, that those folks get a pass on circumcision?
I do not know. I'm looking it up right now.
I mean, you know that I just think it's barbaric. I think, if let's put it this way, if there was, do you think?
It is passed over. It is absolutely passed over if there is a genetic risk.
Do you think that if there was a law that said every female must have her left little finger cut off at birth, do you think that that would have lasted through the ages?
Well, it could have.
And we recoil in horror at the practices that are done to women and young girls, and frankly, there's a laundry list of awful things done. I don't get it.
Okay, so for a child known to have hemophilia, or an adult convert to Judaism known to have hemophilia, the bris is not done. However, these days, they could actually test for hemophilia. So it's not necessarily risk of because of genetics. They actually test the child.
Wow.
Well, I mean, parents who have a risk are going to test the child anyway.
Yeah, sure.
Oh.
I don't know. I guess I just have to. I have to wait for us to move into that Star Trek-y phase of our existence when we go. Everybody can be whatever they want to be, and nobody has to be mutilated without consent. It blows my mind. It does. The inconsistencies, for instance, the ban on tattoos. Now, I don't have any tattoos. But you can't be tattooed and be buried in a proper Jewish cemetery, right?
Correct. Which I told my son as recently as, yesterday.
With certain exceptions, because, you know, it's not like the people who went to the camps decided to get a tattoo.
Right. Well, I have a medical tattoo, and I talked to the rabbi before they did it, and I said they're going to be putting a tattoo on my back that is related to my spine surgery and what's, you know.
Yeah. And so you got a pass?
I did. Actually, it's no longer visible. Anyway, because of the incision or whatever. But it's not there, you know. It's either not there or it's inside.
Right, so somewhere subcutaneous, they've tattooed Kilroy was here and you just didn't know it.
Exactly.
It reminds me of something George Carlin once said. He said the definition of a truly evil tattoo artist is the guy who tattoos on a guy's back. Let's never ever anybody tell all the stuff we wrote on this guy's back. He thinks it's a pirate ship. So, yeah, tough crowd. I thought it was funny. If you want one, get one. It's a consent thing for me.
Yeah. But it's consent to then knowing, you know, if that's something you're willing to live with.
Yeah. I mean, seems like one of those accident of birth things. You know, gee, Mom, you know, if I hadn't been born this way, you mean I could have all of my... I can't imagine now that... And frankly, I didn't realize that there was a home office. You know, you were talking about, well, you know, if you make us stop doing that, you'll make us stop doing this. I didn't realize there was a home office that could actually issue edicts that everybody would follow.
Within ultra-Orthodoxy, there is.
Wow.
It's called Agudat Israel, and they meet once a year.
Wow. And so they could conceivably say, don't do this.
They could conceivably say, don't do this.
And
the British rabbinate is on the verge of saying, don't do this.
Would it merely drive the radicals to be more radical if it was a matter of government saying don't do this?
Right, it can't come from government.
I mean, it could.
But it will get ignored.
Right, because they just scream that they were being persecuted.
Right. Yeah.
Well, it's fascinating cultural business. I don't know. Okay, we got a question in the chat room. Okay, no tattoos. What about piercings?
Piercings are generally fine. Piercings are biblical. They actually showed that you were a slave. I mean, there's a whole slavery thing with piercings, but yeah, piercings are generally fine.
Bad or good?
Fine.
Oh, fine. Okay. All right. Well, don't make it another 6 years between calls. That's all I can say.
Okay, I'll try maybe 5 years next time.
Oh, well, let's. You offer five, I'll counter with three and a half.
Okay, I'll chat in 3.5 years.
All right, sounds good. Take care, Betsy.
All right, bye, love.
Bye now. And thanks to Betsy for helping out this evening. She was the last that we received. We stand still here at 30 minutes remaining in the program at $165 to go to stay out of the hole. Which, you know, 16 at 10, 32 at 5, anything, just to keep it from being, keep us from reaching that desperate phase. You know, we get into all kinds of esoteric conversations here, and you are welcome to participate anytime you wish. 304-574-8178 if you wish to. Let's see here. Note coming in from Asa in Vancouver. Sorry, Bob. All the arguments relating to circumcision are complete BS. The rabbinical class, not unlike the Catholic rank and file, were looking to get their jollies, and this is what they came up with. You get to molest the newborn under the guise of religion, and I apologize if that sounds harsh. I just think somewhere along the way, nobody's speaking up for the little boy. We have finally, in the latter portion of the 20th century, in the early portion of the 21st, we have begun to speak up for little girls who are ritually genitally mutilated. Very few people are speaking up for the little boys. By the way, Marty says, in that Star Trek phase of our existence, it'll just be driven underground and they'll use a phaser. Well, hell, at least that'll be a little more humane. It'll be self-cauterizing. Although, wow, you know, what do you, really? Set phasers on Briss? There's our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. Back to the phones. I think we got Bill. Hey, Bill.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, you?
That was a great call. The last one.
Yeah, fascinating.
Of course, Jim is always solid, but, but I say my first wife her family was Orthodox. She was, my first wife was very typical of the 1960s generation of everybody. I mean, religion was something, believe me, Bob, I spent 4 years in a good Catholic place, and I could serve Mass and sing in a choir, and that's something that's worth a thought, me singing in a church choir. Okay.
No harp?
No, well, the harp they talked about was the one that went with a set of wings. I wasn't qualified for those. I tried not to be anyway.
Yeah, you never struck me as a plucker.
No, but Benji had to talk about, yeah, my first father-in-law, he taught classes, and so we would talk, you know, it's the old story. I was gifted. Both my father-in-laws were yakkers. The first one was, he taught school, you know. He talked to Jewish kids in school, and he sat down and talked to me, because if I had any questions about it, you know, the practice, because, I don't know, I got such a heavy dose of Catholicism that, you know, religion was...
Still recovering, aren't you?
People practiced it, like you guys, were you Baptist?
Oh, yeah. Southern Baptist.
Oh, yeah, you were the real deal, man.
Yeah, you could say we were Orthodox Baptist.
Yeah, exactly. Well, me being Orthodox Catholic, that's for sure. I mean, I come from the generation where you couldn't eat meat on Friday. Unless it was St. Patrick's Day, then the bishop would give you dispensation. So he could make sure you went out and spent a lot of money on corned beef. In fact, I was thinking about the situation in Northern Ireland. I was at a place one night, and it was St. Patrick's Day, and they had a band that was very old school oriented. I remember he was singing, the one guy was singing about the problem with the, what he called the black and tan. You know what that was?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And he was talking about the black and tan running down the streets. I don't know, the Easter, was the Easter Monday Revolution was one of the big ones in Ireland. It was 1916, I think. Yeah, I'm just working a book now on the careers of the King of England, the Russian Tsar, and the Kaiser Wilhelm II. And my God, Bob, those guys kept brushing up against each other, and you know, war could break out here or there or the other place. And these empires, the Austro-Hungarian Empire was a paper. It was a paper situation, you know. They used to use the term Kaiserlich and Königlich for Kaiser and royalty of some kind, the two countries. There's two countries that were financially falling flat on their face, but they joined hands to do it, you know. And there was always, it came to be a threat of war between them and the Russians. And the Kaiser would balance, you know. And Wilhelm was as nutty as a fruitcake. No doubt about that.
Yeah. Sad. Sad, embittered, megalomaniacal. Yeah, lots of those.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was born in a... It was one of those rough births. He came through with a withered arm of some kind. But he had to... He kind of hit it all during his career, you know, but the... And the militarists in Germany frighten me. It makes me embarrasses me as being from that stock. I said, my God, what the hell were they like? But I said, that's what brought my mother's grandfather came here to, he fought in two wars for the Kaiser. And they were looking at that Franco-Prussian mess in 70, and they would call up the old guys who had already done their, you know, service, and he said, the hell with it, and came over here. There's so many American, I'm waiting on a book now that once I get it, I have to have it put on recording. It's a history of, it's called Showbiz from Broad to Video, and man, did that have a background of American entertainment. My dad told me that the way he put it was, Bill, every Chinese restaurant in the city had a four-piece band. That was before radio. That's how guys could make a living, you know, playing here, there, and everywhere. Because the rock generation, the guys that I know best, they have no knowledge of what music was like in the country before rock and roll. And, man, I listened to that stuff in 54 and 5, and with my eyes open and say, what is this stuff? You know?
Yeah.
Because this guy Bill Randall used to play, he'd play Fats and Little Richard, and then he'd throw in the Four Lads and Dean Martin in between that. There you go. And he'd talk about a schizoid performance of music.
What a Bill.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Randall was a law professor, and he taught a course in American culture at Case, because I used to go... What do they call that when you sit there during a class and you're not paying to go there?
Auditing. Yeah. Took me a minute.
Yeah. Because he was interesting, because his knowledge of American musical culture. One guy he pushed was Johnny Ray. My old man was doing some booking, and he booked Johnny Ray quite a few times, and he tried to talk Ray into a personal management contract. And my old man had been successful with that contract that... I'd be sitting somewhere counting my money right now, you know. Well, I can do that now, but it doesn't take too long. You know, it's a quick feed. But getting back, this World War I thing is so big in my mind now that I've located the book on the mining that was going on up in Flanders. And I'll see if I can get my hands on it, because, you know, that's one thing that the English could produce in large numbers was miners. Was Scotland heavy in the coal area?
Not that. Mostly when you hear about coal in the British Isles, it's Wales. Yeah.
Yeah. But these guys were serious, man. They were tunneling under each other, and they'd break into each other's tunnels and shoot it out underground. And Jesus, World War One, they couldn't find enough ways to kill each other. The conventional methods were getting people killed, but the British launched an attack in Flanders, gained about 4 miles and lost about 400,000 men. And I'm trying to get this book on the 1918 situation, because the Germans were able to bring in one hell of a lot of men from the Eastern Front after the treaty where the Russians surrendered. You know who snuck Lenin back into the Soviet Union and back into Russia, rather?
Oh, yeah. The Germans bought the train ticket.
Mm-hmm. And, because the Tsar was... Well, I know Jim's a very good student of Russia, but the Tsar situation was in bad shape. They were starting to have...
Had been for years, if not decades.
Yeah, many years. And that Russo-Japanese war really hurt. It should have been the Japanese served notice. You know, the attack they made on Mukden was surprise attack. Very similar to what they did later on. And of course the Japanese modeled their navy after the British, because what was the best navy in the world in those days? But I think by 1943 we had turned that around, huh?
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit.
Because the American Pacific Fleet was outrageous. In fact, somebody sent me a book from the library I didn't request it. I think it's the Middle McCain. What did he command? Did he command battleships in World War II?
I think he had. Didn't he have a fleet or some subsection of a fleet?
Yeah, he was a fleet admiral, yeah. And so was his father. John McCain was third generation.
Oh, yeah.
And the
genes didn't transfer, apparently, because...
No, they don't always.
John McCain wasn't good at much anything except crashing aircraft.
Yeah, he had a reputation for dumping his own plane off a carrier into the water.
And then
damaging
exactly.
Some others going past.
And yet, for some reason or another, the right wing has decided that he and Lindsey Graham, the Abbott and Costello, or perhaps Lucy and Ricky, of foreign policy in the United States are, you know, real thinkers. I don't know where it comes from. I don't.
Yeah, well, there was a U.S. Grant IV, I think, who was in the American Army around Second World War time. That seemed to stick with a lot of guys. In fact, one of the Lees, Fitz Lee, he was leading troops in the Spanish-American War.
Wow.
He's wearing a blue uniform, man. And some guys keep doing what they know how to do best, you know? Well, even Smedley Butler, he won two congressionals, I know. But how did he win
three,
in a lot of cases?
Three.
Yeah. Did he get three?
I do believe.
Jesus.
Yes.
Yeah. And then he was a Quaker by birth. So much for religion, huh? But he blew his top when he was not named superintendent of the Corps. He had a real bad reaction. And I always tell people, take a look, read War is a Racket, read it. Well, it's an old book. I said, yeah. Some things don't, the basics don't change. The philosophical ideas don't change that much. And religion seems to start off with a good basic idea of philosophical, how you treat your fellow man. And somewhere along the line, somebody gets a hand on it and bothers in me, or it's just that they find out how to make a buck doing it.
No, I don't think it's just you, Bill. I don't think it's just you.
Pardon?
I don't think it's just you. I don't at all.
Yeah, I'm not being evil. I'm going to clear the line, but Jim, there's a guy I would love to talk to. I know his history of Russia is good, but that society was in such terrible shape. Other countries France, of course, was totally different than all of them because they had that revolution of theirs secularized that nation long before everybody else.
Yep. And the minute they became secularized after the revolution, the monarchies of Europe pounced on them. Because we couldn't have that notion of giving all the kings and queens and princesses and princes and dukes and marquises and barons and so forth. We couldn't have that notion of giving them all a free tumbril ride catch on, now, could we?
No. You expect those folks to get a real job?
Oh, I know. If God wanted royals to work real jobs, he wouldn't have had them born royal, now, would he? Nope. Hey, Bill, it's good talking to you this evening.
Go ahead. Take care.
You take care now. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. And
Let's see. We got a few minutes left in the program. Hey, thanks to Asa. Thank you very much, Asa, for pitching in to help out. Now we're only $5 away from finishing up last night's fundraising. So that is just awesome. We're at $155. You know, 15 at 10, 2 at 75, 3 at 50, 6 at 25, 30 at 5. Everything helps. We just can't afford to get into a hole as we run downhill toward the end of July, because I know I'm either going to, and I still don't know. This is a conversation I have yet to have. I don't know if I'm going to be absent tomorrow night or night after tomorrow night, which would be Wednesday or Thursday, or if I'm going to be absent both. Agnes has a doctor's appointment that she has to attend to, and I'm not sure exactly how it's going to work out. So the hole could get bad in a real hurry. And, you know, we need to close it up this evening. Let's see. Like I said, a few minutes left in the conversation in the program for some conversation. If you want to dial in, 304-574-8178, or Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype is fine. A couple of things to put out there for general consumption. This is Titanic Tuesday, when we celebrate the Titanic intellect of the right wing. And just because we say Titanic intellect and right wing does not necessarily mean that we are confining ourselves to the American right wing. You know that it is the virulently right-wing government of Israel that is prosecuting the war against so many civilians in Gaza. And they're losing, and they know they're losing the publicity war. The world sees what they are doing to innocents in Gaza. This is without regard to the question of crappy little rockets that get shot down by the Iron Dome system. No, I'm talking about the 18-month-olds who don't get to be 19-month-olds. I'm talking about the 27-year-old mamas who don't get to be 28-year-old mamas. I'm talking about the 7-year-old little girls who don't get to be 8-year-old little girls. I'm pretty sure none of them are Hamas. Children in UN-run schools. Flattened. And the world sees it, and the world is condemning it. Our government, the United States government, no, we won't. Governmentally. But people all over the United States, Jewish and Gentile alike, many are condemning it. Of course, the right wing in this country is, you know, bomb, baby, bomb! Nits make lice! Kill some more little Palestinian babies! You go for it! BB. But because Israel is so badly losing the PR war around the country, they tried to terrorize Europe. No, I'm not kidding. I wish I was. They tried to terrorize Europe. Now, Bill, and the reason I thought of this, Bill mentioned a moment ago the black and tans, and what are referred to in Ireland as the Troubles. The long and bitter struggle for Irish independence from the English crown. Going back to the 17th century, a legend arose in Dublin of a woman named Molly Malone. She has been memorialized in song in the tune Cockles and Mussels. And in Dublin, one of their most cherished works of public art is the statue of Molly Malone pushing her little forlorn cart full of cockles and mussels. Alive, alive, oh, alive, alive, oh. Calling cockles and mussels alive, alive, oh. Well, the Israeli liaison to the Irish government, whose Twitter handle is @IsraelInIreland, in an effort to shore up support for their slaughter of Palestinian children and women and old men, oopsie, decided it would try to terrorize Ireland and convince the Irish to get on board with the slaughter of Gaza. And toward that end, they tweeted out a photoshopped picture, I'm not kidding you, of the Molly Malone statue in Dublin, onto which, sweet Molly Malone, they had photoshopped the long black Irish, or long black Arabic garment, niqab, the long black body covering scarf that women in Muslim, devout Muslim societies are forced to wear. Underneath the photoshopped picture, and let's just mention in passing that the Irish probably, in the grand scheme of things, I'm guessing, have more in common with the Palestinian people, being as they have been, they were for so very long, an occupied people. They have more in common with the Palestinians than they do the Israelis. They just do. But you can't, you never say never, never give up, because the photoshopped picture of the niqabed Molly Malone statue has a stamp on it that says, Israel now, Dublin next. And then a red banner underneath it that reads, Israel is the last frontier of the free world. Not satisfied with taking a big steaming dump all over Irish cultural heritage, they then moved on to France. You remember France, that built an arch of triumph that the Germans and the Americans both marched through twice. That France. France that was rolled over by the Kaiser's armies and then Hitler's. You remember Hitler. Heute Deutschland, morgen die Welt. Tomorrow the world. Same thing, only different. In this case, the Israeli government took the Mona Lisa. Yes, the Mona Lisa, the single most treasured piece of Western artwork in the entire artistic canon of European history. They took the Mona Lisa and put an Arabic headscarf on her, the hijab, and placed in her hand a Hamas rocket lying upon her shoulder with, again, the stamp, the big bold stamp in white, Israel now, Paris next. Israel is the last frontier of the free world. You know, I think if I were Israel, I would be a little bit more careful about using those Morgan de Veld kind of arguments with the French! But they weren't done! Oh, F, no, they weren't done! Off to the Netherlands, where there's a charming, charming, charming little statue based upon the tale of the Little Mermaid, by Hans Christian Andersen. It wasn't safe from the Israeli government, the right-wing Israeli government, either. I'm sorry, not I was wrong, not the Netherlands, Denmark. Denmark, damn it, Bob. Yeah, Copenhagen. In the harbor. The Little Mermaid. The charming children's tale. Of one creature's desire to be treated as fully human, You know, like the Palestinians want. What did the Israelis do to deface that precious work of Western art? Well, they photoshopped her holding a great damn big gun. Again, the white stamp. Israel now. Denmark next. Israel is the last frontier of the free world. You kind of got to say it with that Charlton Heston sort of emphasis on the syllables. But we've saved the best, or, depending on your point of view, the worst, for last. Italy. You know what they did, don't you? Yeah, sure, Molly Malone in Dublin, the Mona Lisa in Paris, the Little Mermaid in Denmark. What are you going to do to... What piece of precious cultural heritage in Italy could you possibly use to prop up your slaughter of Palestinian people? Come on, come on, come on. Now remember, the goddess of irony is working here. Somebody must have sacrificed a bunch of rubber chickens to her, because the Israeli government defaced an image of the David. Yes, David, that David. The Israelis' David! The Jewish hero! David! The guy with the star! David! The slingshot, Goliath, in the head, dead! The Jewish mythological equivalent of freaking Achilles, okay? But as rendered into quite possibly the most brilliant, beautiful, amazing piece of statuary the world will ever know by Michelangelo Buonarroti. What did the Israelis do to the David? Why, they gave him that red and white checkered headscarf of the Palestinians and covered up his nakedness with a suicide bomber dynamite belt. No, really, they did. I wish I was kidding. I'm not. And of course it bears the stamp Israel now. Italy next. Israel is the last frontier of the free world. Disgusting. You know, I have time after time after time after time after time denounced these right-wing pieces of crap. The Holocaust deniers, and the people who want to bomb and burn synagogues and mistreat people simply because of what their faith is or their ethnicity or their heritage. It's evil and it's wicked and it's nasty. Guess what? So too is doing things like this to other people's cultural heritage. Yeah, but it was only a picture, Bob. A mind conceived it. And somebody in the Irish, in the Israeli embassy or consulate or what the hell ever in Ireland thought, this is going to be a great, oh my God, this is a great idea. We're going to use the cultural icons of four different pieces of precious heritage, and we're going to deface the images of them in order to convince them that there is an Islamic threat that is... They want, the hordes want to overrun the world, just like Genghis Khan and the Turks and oh, be afraid. It didn't go over any too well, such that Israel then turned around
And they said, one of the administrators of the embassy's social media accounts posted the images, which originated from a media site. When the account administrator received a request from one of our followers to take down the images, the request was complied with immediately. There was no intention to cause insult or offense to anyone. Well, goody. That, by God, is what you call a non-apology apology. We're sorry if any of you were insulted by our attempt to make you think that there's going to be Muslim hordes boiling through the streets of Dublin and Copenhagen and Florence and Paris. Jesus. Hey. Well, I overtalked a little bit. Sorry about that. Time to get out of here. Thanks, everybody, for joining in for the conversation. And thanks for your ongoing support. We will we'll begin the program tomorrow evening at, if we're here tomorrow evening. If not, on Thursday evening, and if not, then Friday, with a $305 fundraising goal. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you. And thank you for pitching in this evening, Ann and Gene. Our news ninjas. Thank you to our news ninja, Susan. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACACT, ACHEACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.